Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, you are very welcome to The Tonight Show. Despite recent efforts from government, Virgin Media Television's State of the Nation poll finds that childcare still remains a crippling cost for many families. We hear from Beirut as Tánaiste and Minister of Defence Micheál Martin visits Irish peacekeepers and Lebanese officials following the death of Private Sean Rooney.
I will be really emphasising the necessity for a thorough investigation and that those responsible for this heinous crime will be brought to justice.
And the war in Ukraine ramps up, the doomsday clock ticks on. And does the average voter actually care about expensing election posters? We discuss the big stories of the week with our panel. Well, the cost of childcare in this country is a long-standing problem that predates the cost of living crisis, and it remains a burden for many families. While government says a record number of children are benefiting from subsidies and supports, according to the results of Virgin Media Television's State of the Nation Red Sea poll, it would appear there is a way to go before many families feel early childcare is really affordable. Let's take a look at some of those findings. Over one-third of people are concerned about their ability to meet childcare costs within the next 12 months. 57% of respondents expressed that there's limited choice of affordable childcare in their area. 26% are experiencing childcare costs as one of their biggest financial commitments each month, and this figure rises to 41% among 18 to 34-year-olds. And almost 4 in 10 or their partners would consider giving up work to mind the children full-time to save money on childcare costs. Well, for more on this, I am joined tonight by Fine Gael Senator Mary Ciarán Kearney, News Talk presenter Kieran Cudahy, broadcaster Niall Boylan, and parenting journalist Jen Hogan. You are all very welcome to the programme. And Jen, I'm going to start with you because there were some positives when it came to childcare in the last budget. There was investment, the burden was lifted for families to some degree, but I suppose it was such a long time coming and the investment had been so minuscule prior to that, that we started from a point where it was incredibly expensive. So we have a long way to go before it's affordable.
A long way to go. And I was speaking to parents about this today and they were saying, yes, they absolutely appreciate the subsidies. But even with the cost of living crisis that we're in at the moment and with the increased cost of other things, it's been swallowed up, they feel, in terms of their general income, the money that they're having to spend on other things. They're not getting to feel the benefit of it yet. So it's not really a surprise when you look at some of the statistics there and some of the figures there, even the thing about 4 in 10 speaking about stepping back from work and maybe taking care of their children full time. I'm almost surprised it was only 4 in 10 because this has been going on for a long, long time where, and it is women in particular, women have been disproportionately impacted by the cost of childcare because it's often women who reduce their hours or step back from work. And we talk about this gender pay gap. There is a motherhood penalty. Actually, Cliff Taylor had a very interesting piece in the Irish Times today just speaking about the gender pay gap. And the motherhood penalty has a role to play in this and it has a big part to play in it. And they're stepping back because it's not worth their while working and paying childcare, or if they can even access childcare in the first place.
And that other stat that for 40% of people between 18 to 34, which is probably the age when people have young you know, children, and that's when they're most costly, I know that firsthand, for 40% of people, it's one of their biggest monthly outgoings. And we've heard that phrase time and time again for people, it's a second mortgage,
it's a second
or it's a second rent. In fact, it's probably in excess for a lot of people.
It is. I mean, they're huge huge cost, absolutely huge cost. It's actually putting people off, some parents report today, it's putting them off having a second child in some cases because it's such a huge part of their income as is. They can't afford to have a sibling or another child if they want to because they can't manage it. And with the cost of rent and difficulties around housing, it's just not an option for them at all.
It was one of the real difficulties, I think, in this budget is, yet there was a lot done, Mary, if you had a child in a really traditional childcare setting, if you had them in a full-time creche or if you had them in a Montessori. But if you had an au pair or you had a childminder at home or you sent your child to a childminder, there wasn't much done for you. And that's perhaps why there's still so many people considering it to be one of their biggest monthly outgoings.
Well, I think the fact of the cost of childcare is something that has been long recognised by government, and year on year we've been on a trajectory of increasing the subsidy within childcare. So in mainstream childcare, where it is accountable, where government can see where the money is going, where parents can receive the benefit of that. So in January of this year, we saw a really substantial intervention where the payment under the NCS scheme was based on an hourly increase, so it went from 50 cent an hour to 140 an hour, and that was very substantial. It was 62 euros a week of a decrease in the cost of childcare per child, which is substantial if you had a child in full-time childcare. I appreciate, though, if you have a childminder or an au pair at home, that as yet we're not at that stage. However, we are in the process of a childminding strategy, and that is to ensure there is a universality of support in childminding, that there is that flexibility, and that we register childminders. So if you're with a registered childminder, there are means of getting support there, and there are subsidies that go to childminders for people who want to register and set up a childminding facility in their old home.
I think we know that there is a minuscule proportion of childminders in this country that are registered and that can avail of that.
Absolutely, but
that's always been.
When the childminding strategy was launched, we had a number of the childminding groups to the children's committee, and yet they talked about that there is this reluctance, this fear of registering, and in actual fact it is a job of government to ensure that people are informed as to the benefits, and we're seeing a slow increase certainly in people registering for childminding. I know that it is increasing, and as you talk to childminding groups, they are showing that increase of an interest in, I suppose, we need people registered in order to be able to extend the subsidies beyond the traditional childcare.
Okay, Kieran, do you think the system as it currently stands is working, is fair?
It's fairer than it was. Several governments, it's not just this one, have increased the investment in early childhood education, childcare, however you want to describe it. We're certainly not up at European standards as a percentage of GDP in terms of what we spend yet.
But it's still less than 1%.
Yeah, it's certainly than it used to be. But I mean, Jen is like, housing is the kind of the elephant in the room here. It's the cost of housing, and you have to think about the age profile and think of the age profile of the respondents to the Virgin Media survey as well, and those between 18 and 34 who are most profoundly impacted. They're also the people who are paying the highest rents in the history of the state. That's what makes childcare cripplingly expensive for them. Like, it was 10, 15 years ago, you're right. Like, this was a story that people talked about. It was a scandal.
I still think if people were paying more manageable rents, the cost of childcare in this country would still appear extortionate.
In
comparison to our European counterparts.
It would be more extortionate in comparison to our European counterparts, but you would have more disposable income to spend on that childcare. And I'm not necessarily saying that's fair compared to the rest of Europe, but at least you would have it. I think the problem is that we've got a situation now that people are genuinely holding off having children, maybe not having a second or a third. And I know there's an argument out there, if you can't afford it, don't have it. That is detrimental to society down the line.
Okay.
You see, financially disincentivize people having children.
And I think that that's where Niall probably wants to come in. That is one of your point of view, isn't
well,
it?
Well,
it should be a consideration.
It should be a consideration. I mean, I think everybody, I mean, when we had our first children going back, you know, 25 years ago, I mean, it is a consideration. When you get married, you know, you get married, you buy a house, then you start to have the children, you have a couple of holidays before you have your first child to get it out of the way. So that is all preparation for being married in life. Now, I do understand what people are saying, and we should be looking at maybe something like the French model, whereby higher earners pay more money for childcare costs, up to 800 quid in France, 250 for lower income earners. So we should be subsidising to some degree. But the problem is, when the government oversubsidises something, the quality reduces, and then it becomes abused as well. So you can't oversubsidise, because of course that the whole system will suffer if you oversubsidise, because
so
the subsidy is not passed on. Because I spoke to people on the air.
But do you actually think, though, Niall, that when you're sitting down, if you're trying to plan whether to have children or not, our children, or have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that you need to think, can I afford
Absolutely.
This? And that it's not up to government.
Well, it's
to
not
pay
up to every taxpayer in the country to fund your children. You have to fund them to some degree yourself. You know, you can't expect everything for your children for free. And one of the problems with having children, if you both want to work, is that somebody has to look after those children. So that has to be factored
in. Typically women.
Well, women. Well, if you go back to the Sulis. Sulis did a poll back in 2017 where they asked women who were in the workplace if they were paid the same amount of money, would they like to stay at home? And they said yes. Primarily, they said yes.
Okay.
So what I'm saying to you is, it's not always, it's because women in a lot of cases choose to do that or take up
and
that
is,
role.
Is that actually, Jen, one of the discussions that we never have about childcare in this country, is that the model that we have now created in this society and the economy that we've created is that if there is a single parent or both parents, that they both need to go out to work now. And we don't discuss how perhaps we need to support people to stay at home if they want to.
Absolutely. We have there is an element of choice there that has been taken away, and we don't have a situation really where people can afford necessarily for someone to stay at home. They're being forced maybe to stay at home because when they look at the childcare costs versus their income costs and versus their other overheads. But it is something that disproportionately impacts women, completely disproportionately impacts women. And while they might like to stay at home, the choice is gone. And I think that's where the huge difference is. But childcare is largely a women's issue. And until it becomes a societal issue, nothing is going to change.
I think it's unfair to say it's a women's issue. It's a family issue. And I think it's both men and women. It's a couple. Couples work as a team together when they get married or when they are together with children.
I want to ask actually, Kieran, because there was one of the stats there about the 40% of people who were surveyed saying they would consider giving up work because of the cost of childcare. Was that a conversation in your house? Was it ever you that was going to be the one to stay at home, or more likely to be your wife?
No, when our children were very young, my wife went back to work after maternity leave. Now, she did give up work just before our first started primary school. And I think it was just... it was a quality of life thing. Like, I suppose we were in the position financially where we were able to afford one of us to reduce hours, to work a little bit less. And she wanted to spend more time at home with the kids while they were still young and before they went off to school and kind of had their own lives. And if I'm being entirely honest, I never considered it and I wouldn't consider it. Just not
for me. And
you
wouldn't?
No.
And you wouldn't?
No, but that's...
She made that choice. She made that choice.
Of all men, either.
Yeah.
Like.
But do you think that...
If my wife had said to me, Kieran, I absolutely want to stay working, would you have any interest, by the way, in staying at home and minding the kids? I would have said, no, you're grand.
And I think that's really especially if it is a quality of life issue and you're looking at your children and some children having to spend really long hours in childcare, particularly, again, because of the housing situation, they're moving far out, somebody might look at staying at home. If dad doesn't want to stay at home and mom continues to work, then there's... the quality of life is compromised. So largely women will look at staying behind and staying at home if it's not because of cause, because they want to give their kids, they want to spend time with the kids and want them not to be in such long hours.
Mary, just to ask you a question, because I know the government has introduced these subsidies and these supports for childcare in this country, but Sinn Féin have said in an interview recently, I think Kathleen Funchin said, their aim would be to have universal free childcare for everyone. Notwithstanding whether you're working or not working, or whether you earn 250,000 or 20,000. Is that an ambition for this government?
Well, I think that the programme from the government absolutely commits to an increasing subsidy year on year in childcare to ensure that we have that intervention. A universality of experience for children, because childcare isn't child minding. It is about child development. It's about fostering creativity. When centres are inspected and they're their curriculum and their day is inspected, and that there is a diversity of child experience. So I think that's really important.
Okay, but I think the point they were making
was by setting in standards.
There's free secondary school, there's free primary school for kids in this country. Why wouldn't we just have free preschool or free Montessori or creche for children prior to 4 or 5 years of age?
Well, the minister has made a commitment that we will be increasing the subsidies. At this moment in time, it is now 25% less in the subsidy that's being paid. You know, the subsidy is 25% of childcare costs. That's increasing. And an important feature to mention is
so universal
that
free
there
is not an ambition of Fine Gael.
It isn't just about that. I mean, there has to be balances about ensuring that there is capacity, ensuring that we are reducing the administrative burden on services, because there is a lot of record keeping. But there is a really important thing here, and that is that there is the NCS universal subsidy, but also there is an income-based subsidy that is substantially higher than that, again, and ranges from 370. It's means tested. But where you have people in that 18 to 34 age group who are challenged in their income, there is no reason why they wouldn't go and they wouldn't look for that subsidy as well and see if they can qualify and get that extra intervention in the care of their children.
Given the fact, Ciarán, that it seems to be more difficult to introduce subsidies or supports for people who aren't using the traditional creche or Montessori, whether it's an au pair or a childminder or whatever, is another way of supporting parents here who do seem to be struggling, according to this poll, still with the costs of childcare, to increase child benefit?
Yeah, arguably, but again, it'd have to be like maybe
this
is kind of contrary
payment
to popular opinion. Child benefit should be means tested, I think, in this country. Like, I understand the principle that the payment isn't to the parent; the payment is for the child. At the same time, children don't live in a vacuum; they're dependent on those parents, and if those parents can afford to raise them. I mean, there was an internal report from the Department of Finance a couple of years ago that Danny McConnell got sight of, and it was reported in the Irish Examiner. And they made the point, the Department of Finance themselves made the point, that far too many benefits in this country are paid to too many people, and it means that they are spread too thin, and they should be targeted more at the people who need them. In other words, people who don't need them get them, and the people who really need them, who'd really benefit from the support you're talking about, they don't get enough support.
And Jen, that possibly means somebody like you, sorry, I just want to bring Jen back in here, you probably wouldn't get that payment. What would that mean?
I don't agree with Ciarán there. I don't think it should be means-tested. I absolutely agree we need more targeted payments too. But I think you're disincentivising people from having children. I also think, having spoken to parents about this and the sort of things they use child benefit for, and these were parents who said that they feel if it was means tested, they would lose out. They use it to support things like books. They use it to support treatments, maybe private treatments for children who might need additional supports, maybe have additional needs. They use it towards paying for activities to keep their children involved in sports, which the cost of which varies hugely around the country. They use it to have them maybe in other social things or other supports that their children might need, not necessarily again children with additional needs here, but children who might be struggling in other areas of school and they want to have them feeling part of the community, making friends. They use them to give their children particular opportunities or pay bills. And these parents feel that if they were to be means tested, because especially at the moment with the cost of living crisis, they would probably lose that benefit. And so they, you know, it would be a huge loss to them.
Okay, Niall, what do you think?
I would have no issue with it being child benefit being means tested at a reasonable amount. If you were to say 150,000 or something like that, but certainly anything less than that. Yeah,
per house.
Yeah, for family income. But because, of course, you could have two people earning 50 grand, which bring you up to 100. And 100,000 is not a lot when you've got a big mortgage and you've got bills to pay and you've got a car to look after, etc. Two cars, maybe, for both going to work. But anything less than that, I think it would be unfair to means test. In relation to this idea that you could give childcare for free, that could never happen. If we did that, all that would happen is we reduce the quality of the childcare. It'll be abused. It'll be used by people who don't even need to use it.
I need to
deal with that, the idea of reducing the quality. That's absolutely not the case. From 2016, every professional working in the childcare, and there are and we have thousands of them all over the country, have to be qualified to particular standards. And so there is a universality of qualification. There's also curriculum, content, creativity, the materials that are used. All of that is supported by the state. And the other part of it, the National Childcare Scheme applies to children up to the age of 15. You know, so it's not just a preschool service. And also, we have 2 years now of under the ECCE scheme or the ECHE scheme of children having free access to school, where you know, and having those days and that intervention. And that's important to emphasise.
I just want to go to one other issue that was raised by our president, Michael D. Higgins, this week. Jen, you've just called him a legend, so I feel like you're in support of what he said, which is time to scrap the homework. He said, schools are for education, home is for home, spending time with friends, family and creative activities. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. He is spot on here, and I wish our politicians would pay attention. I wish our Minister for Education would listen and take action here and actually stop leaving this to the schools to decide. School is for education. There is no research that will really back up that homework is of any academic benefit to primary school age children in particular.
I'd be interested, Mary, in your opinion on this.
I have a mixed view, because I think that depending on the home, if parents are obliged to help their children with their homework, they may not have the level of literacy that is required. So I think that from that experience, you don't want parents shamed in front of their children or unable to assist children with their homework. Okay. So I think that we need to be sensitive about that. However, this call isn't coming from teachers. And at the end of the day, teachers...
Personally,
I have a 7-year old. There are occasions when, and I was saying earlier, I've been in the parliamentary party when I've got a screenshot of the homework to say, what does this mean?
Sorry, I think this is anecdotal, but plenty of teachers I know would love to see homework abolished.
And actually, I've heard someone in favour. I'm just wondering what Fine Gael's position is, because you are the spokesperson on children.
Yes, but I mean, we don't have an official position on homework, because homework is the province of teachers, and if they call for it, and if they want homework abolished,
it's vital.
But there is a fact
vital.
That
homework is vital.
Also, though, gives parents a feedback in how their children are doing, where they're struggling.
I don't think we have consensus here in the panel, so we're going to have to leave it there for now. But thanks to all of you for joining me on that topic, and my thanks to Mary and Jen for joining me. The rest of the panel staying with me, and after the break, we are going to be discussing their winners and losers from the past week. Some of the other big stories that have stolen the spotlight this week. Kieran Cullihy and Niall Boylan are still with me, and I'm also joined now by Dublin editor of the Irish Times, Olivia Kelly. Olivia, you're very welcome to the programme. We're going to start with our winners of the week, and you and Kieran have both picked the same person, which is Volodymyr Zelensky. Mm. Is that because of the win in securing these tanks from the United States and from Germany? He's been calling for them for a long time.
Indeed. Since the start of the conflict, really, he's been asking for this sort of military hardware, and finally it's come, and it's possibly a gateway to other things, you know, possibly even we're talking not just ground forces from now on, you know, he's possibly getting
missiles, fighter jets,
that sort of thing
for. The fact that he had called for them for so long, it was actually quite surprising, because his reaction was really quite muted, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. I thought the same myself, but you know, there's some concern, I think, about the time lag as to when these are going to arrive, you know, and they're really facing very, very immediate, desperate situation. But yeah, it's there's speculation of whether it will open the door to more or not. But yeah, it's clearly it is a big breakthrough for him.
The difficulty here, Kieran, I suppose, and the reluctance from particularly the German point of view was, you know, that real difficulty, I'd imagine, in the idea of sending tanks east again, it always will harp back to World War II for them, but also a real fear, I think, among certain members of the German public and indeed politicians, that it makes them a target, notwithstanding the fact that Germany has sent so much military aid to Ukraine since the start of the war. Do you see this as an escalation in the type of support Europe has given?
Well, yeah, there's no other way to describe it other than an escalation. Now, the question is whether
it's a worthy escalation, like it's a justified escalation. In my own view, yeah, it is. Like, you know, as Olivia said, I picked Vladimir Zelensky as one of the winners of the week as well. So I think this was the right thing to do, to provide these tanks. But it is an escalation in the same way that the HIMARS that they were previously provided with, that was an escalation at the time, that some of the aerial defences was an escalation. The next big escalation that might be on the cards, rather the thing that the Ukrainians are going to come looking for next, by all accounts, will be long-range missiles. Now, see, the question is, where's the red line for European countries, and for NATO in particular? So we can take it as red, troops on the ground, that's a red line. That's not going to happen. But
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Where is the red line before that? You know, is it before or after long-range missiles? At the moment, there's reluctance. And we're going through the same dance as we did with the tanks. Mm. They don't want to send these because it's seen as an unnecessary provocation, because you can target...
And the same with the fighter jets.
You can target Russia as well. Yeah, but the fighter jets, like...
Which I think the Germans have said they are not sending.
Yeah, Kira Rudik, the MP, is talking about F-16s. Ukrainian pilots are not trained to fly F-16s, first of all. So there's kind of just a bit of optics going on there. Long-range missiles are the next big thing, because if they withstand this spring offensive from the Russians, the expectation is then that they're going to want to push forward themselves with an early summer offensive. The tanks would be central to that, but they will want long-range missiles to target deep behind the Russian front lines.
So the question now is whether or not a country like Germany should resist that request, should they?
Yeah, well, they will first. And the view in Ukraine is what you get from Germany is kind of 999, maybe, yeah, okay, finally we'll do it. And they went through that with aerial support, they went through that with the tanks, and you would imagine behind the scenes the process has already started for long-range missiles. And I'm not sure, is it fair to say there's an expectation they'll get to, yes, but there'll be a hope from the Ukrainian side that they'll go through the same dance and ultimately they might get them.
Do you see this as provocation of the Russians? I mean, we did see this doomsday clock, which I have to be honest, I hadn't heard about, or I'd certainly perhaps heard about and forgotten about.
Was it 90 seconds to the end?
90 seconds to sort of global collapse. It's this metaphor for global collapse. It was 100 seconds. I think that's Mary Robinson there, moving it forward 10 seconds. But it is a direct response, I suppose, to the fear that Russia will respond perhaps with some sort of nuclear attack, and that they are being provoked into doing so perhaps by the sending of tanks like this and perhaps further
I mean, look, Kieran and Olivia know a lot more about this than I clearly do, and I'm not going to claim to know a lot. I don't like Vladimir Zelensky. I don't like Russia. I don't like what's going on. I do believe it's provocation. And it always concerns me when other countries get involved in this war. I know Sabina Higgins was lambasted for what she said. I think she was calling at that particular time, I think maybe the context of her words weren't seen correctly, that she was calling for peace. I think that's what everyone in the world would realistically want, is peace, particularly the people in Ukraine. But when I see, you know, other countries getting involved, no matter on what sort of level they get involved, this all adds fuel to that fire. And we are dealing with somebody who is
but
clearly...
But what's the alternative, I suppose?
Well, the alternative is talks. And the alternative is somebody at some point has to give in. And that's just the reality of this.
But it's not the only alternative.
But it is the reality. No, either Russia has to give in.
To say the alternative
somebody
to
has to give in.
Providing
somebody has to give in.
Providing support is talks. The other alternative is just
you can't
that
keep fighting.
It's just that the Russians just grind.
People
down
just keep dying. All that's going to happen is innocent people from Russia, because they are innocent soldiers.
Or that's
just
defeat.
People like and innocent people from Ukraine
yeah, but no,
are dying.
My point is so that somebody it's not has fair to give present in. It as a binary choice between.
But it is a binary choice.
No, it's not.
But now people have shown no interest.
Absolutely. By the way. So I have how, no do love we, for Putin. How do we? I have, you no, know, I have absolutely
no love for
what he's
doing. The thing is, how do you achieve that, though? If one party will not come to the table,
he is a crazy dictator. But he is.
But
the
if
type
he won't
person.
Come to the table, what do you do?
Okay, then? So what's the alternative? Other countries get involved and more people lose their lives. Other countries get involved and other countries then become part of that war and more people lose their lives. Or that crazy person decides to press a button one day and thousands of people die, all because we're not willing to surrender something.
All right. Okay, well, sorry, I want to, sorry, sorry to put a question.
No, I mean, I don't mean we.
Exactly, and we can't speak on behalf of the people of Ukraine or indeed Volodymyr Zelensky. I want to move on to your winner of the week, Niall Boylan, which I think might surprise some people.
I think it might surprise some people.
Pascal Donoghue.
Because I like him. You know, I like Pascal. And, you know, I mean...
So forgive all?
No, it's not a case of forgive all, right? Because... What made me laugh during the week is that Sinn Féin and Louise O'Reilly, for example, said he had lost credibility in relation to his explanation for what had happened and his dealings with Michael Stone. Now, Michael Stone is a credible businessman. Yes, there were undertakings, and we can see him there on the screen, there were undertakings that certainly he said he omitted to mention. This is in relation to the van during the election campaign. Now, other stuff came out as well in relation to companies that he had owned. But in saying that, he stood defiant. He was defended, of course, by Leo Varadkar and by Micheál Martin. I don't believe if we looked at every single politician in this country, if we looked at every single person in this country, and I'm looking around the table here today, I think if we look back in time, there's been cronyism in all our lives, a bit of nepotism probably in all our lives at some point or another. And if we were to scrutinise and under a microscope, which is what is happening particularly to politicians at the moment, some worse than others, should we have the leader of the country involved in leaking documents to his best mate,
but is that an excuse?
So, you know what I mean? But what I'm saying is it's not the worst thing in the world that has happened. I mean Sinn Féin basically shouldn't be told stones in glass houses.
I think what Niall's saying is it's not the worst, it could be worse, and sure this has been going on for
a
long time.
I agree with Niall in one sense. Pascal is a winner this week, as in everyone who mattered rallied around him, and he is safe at this stage. And, you know, the Sinn Féin call for a vote of no confidence, that's gone away now. You know, I may be jinxing him, but he's home and dry as far as I can see.
He's a nice guy.
So in that stage, he is... I'm not disputing Pascal. I agree. Yeah, Pascal's a nice guy.
I think he's a clever guy. And you know what? I think he's one of the best politicians we have in government, and I'm not a fan of Fine Gael.
Your loser of this week was not Pascal Donoghue. Your loser of this week was the CAM story, the mental health services for children. Kieran, why?
Yeah, but it's related to Pascal Donoghue, because that was a genuine scandal, and it's not the only failing at this government.
Sorry, the
and
CAMs.
CAMs was a genuine scandal.
Not the Pascal Donoghue election.
Pascal Donoghue wasn't. I mean, it was an oversight, and we're all guilty of it. And Niall is right. Sinn Féin had their cocks softened when stories came out about them being equally guilty of oversights in recording election expenses. But we had a really damning report out this week about some of the state's most vulnerable citizens, children and adolescents with mental health difficulties. Stories about some of them waiting over 2 years to see a specialist. We have stories, and we've heard stories, and I'm sure you've heard them on the airways, in newspapers, of children with suicidal thoughts, and the best advice that can be given to them is just go down to the local emergency department, because we don't have the CAMS support in this area to help you out. Complete geographical lottery is what we have in this country as to the support for those children. And you know what?
I don't even think it was a geographical lottery here, because I think I think one zone in Ireland, the other six CAM zones were not providing an adequate service to children in the area.
18-month waiting list is certainly not an adequate service.
The point is that the day after that report came out, the Dáil, they spent the entire day talking about election posters. There was no mention of that. And this was my
kind of gripe with the whole Pascal Donoghue story is Pascal did something wrong and there just should be consequences and, you know, the punishment should fit the crime and all of that. But there are serious failings that this government are guilty of. And that is one such failing. The other failing, again, is related to some of the most vulnerable citizens of the state, and it's children with additional needs.
Well, who do you hold them responsible? Is that the media's fault? Is that opposition's fault?
I think, Ciarán, we have to take some of the blame for it, because I think the media, we have to take some of the blame, because, you know, the stories like Pascal or like Enoch Burke, for example, they distract the media completely away from what's really important in society. And we've done that too ourselves. So we're guilty.
Well, actually, Olivia, your loser of the week is Enoch Burke. This saga continues on and on and on. The High Court today ruled that he has to be fined €700 a day if he does not agree to a court order to stay away from the school by 2 p.m. tomorrow. First of all, why do you think this story has dominated for so long?
Well, because of Enoch Burke, because of Enoch Burke's persistence in what he's doing here. And the reason I call him the loser of the week, because he's lost his livelihood now. Like, what school in their right mind would employ the man now after this? And, you know,
I don't think there was ever any questions of the kind of type of teacher he was or the skill that he presented as a teacher. But it possibly will be difficult for him to go forward and look for employment elsewhere, if that is what he is going to do, which some would wonder if he will, because it appears that he wants to be reinstated. Do you think that is the goal here, Ciarán?
His goal is martyrdom. Yeah, it is.
He's like some Jesuit priest in Elizabethan England who turns up from the continent and instead of actually tending their flock, he wants to get caught and burned in Tyburn for the notoriety. You know, he's not looking for martyrdom.
Can I say something? I mean, look, the Burke family, I wouldn't be fans of them. I don't agree with anything they stand for. I mean,
I'm very conscious that the Burke family. Even though I know he did a position.
I refer to their Christian values.
Opportunity to speak to media today, and he did.
I refer to their Christian values, right? You know, I'm not religious at all, so I don't believe in anything that they stand for, and people would be very familiar with their Christian values. And I don't believe I don't stand for anything that Enoch Burke stands for. But the one thing I'll say is the man is persistent. He stands up for his principles. If half the politicians in Ireland were as good as that or stood up for the principles, I think we'd have a very good country. So you have to... That's the only thing I'll ever credit the man for, that he's persistent. You know, he has the tenacity to stand there every day. The judge has said if he doesn't learn his lesson from the £700 a day fine, he's going to increase it. I mean, I'm waiting to see his day in court.
Whether it's a deterrent or not, who knows? Where do you think this could end, Olivia?
Well, there is a process there where he can appeal. It's unlikely that appeal will be successful, but I think he will go to that school every day while that appeal possibility is still there, whether he lodges an appeal or not. If he does, he may keep on going to the school until that timeline has run out for an appeal to be adjudicated on. But I do doubt that the judges hope that this will deter him from going to the school. I doubt that that's realistic. I think he will come back.
OK, I just want to move on to Niall, to your loser of the week, which I think would have been a lot of people's winner, will be the Banshees of Inisherin and our record number of nominations at this year's Oscars.
I don't want to upset people. No, I decided that I better watch this and see what all the panic is about. So I put it on. Two blokes who don't speak to each other anymore, and one bloke tries to cut his fingers off. And one bloke who tries to cut his fingers off unless his mate starts talking to him. They're in a small village. They meet every day in the same pub. They can't miss each other.
So I just found the
whole thing, principle behind it, was rubbish. It lasted 20 minutes.
I want the 20
minutes of my life back.
The cinematography, acting.
It kind of portrayed Ireland as this really old place where people act like they're in the 16th century. It's horrendous. I thought it was a terrible film.
What did you, Olivia?
It's like Brooklyn. Remember that movie, Brooklyn?
You haven't seen it.
Oh, snooze fest.
Will you see it?
I'd say I probably will eventually go and see it. There'd be a few others of the Oscar contenders that'd be on my list first. After Sun, I'd say I'd probably prefer.
What was that old Irish film? Ryan's Daughter. It's worse than that.
I think a lot of people would disagree. It was an amazing week for the Irish industry, wasn't it?
It was great. I haven't seen the movie yet either.
Watch it.
But it was an amazing week. And it's validation for hard work done in like the 80s and 90s by like, I spoke to Lenny Abrahamson during the week. In 1991, he made a short movie. It was one of two short movies made in Ireland that year and no feature length film. That was it. That was the entire output of the entire industry in this country. I mean, it's validation for all of that kind of Trojan work.
Give me a good Marvel movie any day.
We're going to leave that there for now. Lots more after the break when we hear from the Taoiseach's visit to Lebanon and why the Italians are less than impressed with Ireland's plan to put health warnings on bottles of wine. Stay with us. Kieran, Niall and Olivia are still with me, but first, Taoiseach Micheál Martin met with Lebanese ministers in Beirut this evening to discuss the investigation into Private Sean Rooney's death, the 24-year-old killed on the 14th of December while serving on a UN mission. For more on this visit, I spoke a little earlier to Virgin Media News correspondent Aisling Ní Chosaile. Aisling, the Taoiseach today spoke with troops, Irish troops based at Camp Shamrock. What did he say to them and what did they say to him about their friend and their colleague, the late Private Sean Rooney?
Yes, well, Ciara, as you can well imagine, it was quite an emotional day at Camp Shamrock in South Lebanon today. The Taoiseach was here only in May, and he said to the troops today when he arrived that he never expected to be back here so soon and also under such emotionally charged and difficult circumstances. He arrived by helicopter quite early this morning, and he was met with a guard of honour by members of the 121st Infantry Battalion. That is the battalion that Private Sean Rooney was member of. So the troops that were there today meeting the Taoiseach, they were Private Rooney's friends, they were his colleagues, they were people who had trained with him. Micheál Martin spent a lot of time talking to the troops, talking to them about the last 6 weeks, and it has been an extremely difficult 6 weeks for the members of this overseas deployment. There's 331 in this deployment and 100 of them are abroad for the first time. So some of them are very, very young, only in their late teens. The Taoiseach also attended a memorial service in a village close to Camp Shamrock called Tibnin, and that village has a memorial erected in the village in memory of the 48 Irish soldiers who have lost their lives here in the line of duty in Lebanon. Sean Rooney's name added to that plaque over the last number of weeks. And it was interesting to note, I suppose, at that memorial today, not alone was there members of the Irish Defence Forces there and the Taoiseach and some other dignitaries, but there was members from the local community had come out to pay their respects as well. And even being here in Beirut over the last day or two, talking to people here, when they hear that you are Irish, they have heard of the incident that occurred on December 14th, and many of them have expressed their sympathies to us as Irish citizens for what has happened. Now, the Taoiseach, when he returned to Camp Shamrock today, he had lunch with the troops and he spent quite a considerable amount of time talking to them about how the last 6 weeks have been. In his address to them, he mentioned a lot the sacrifice they give in order to come over here for an overseas deployment. You're talking about a period of 6 months away from their family and their friends and their loved ones. And he mentioned that sacrifice a number of times. And on behalf of the Irish people, he thanked them very firmly for their service.
And the Taoiseach also met with some Lebanese ministers today, some members of government, where the investigation that's been carried out into the death of Private Rooney was discussed. What was said by the Taoiseach about that investigation and how was it received, Aisling?
Yeah, naturally, the main issue and the main reason for this visit was the visit to Camp Shamrock, but there was a number of meetings that took place around the visit to South Lebanon. Those meetings taking place in Beirut. And firstly, this morning, he met with the UN Under Secretary General Jean Lacroix, and he has a responsibility for peace operations in the UN. And naturally, the incident that occurred on the 14th of December was discussed in great detail at that meeting. Micheál Martin also meeting this evening with the Lebanese Minister for Defence and for Foreign Affairs. He took that opportunity once again at that meeting to reiterate to the Lebanese government the determination of the Irish government to establish all the facts and the circumstances surrounding that incident on the 14th of December, which resulted in Private Rooney losing his life. He said that no stone would be left unturned in order to try and bring those who are responsible for Private Rooney's death to justice. And he told us that the Lebanese government has assured him that their objective is the same. They want to see the same outcome.
Ashley Nikushla live in Beirut in the Lebanon for us a little earlier this evening. I want to move back home, Olivia, to the news this week that 24 asylum seekers who come into this country were not offered accommodation, were told there was no accommodation for them available. Do you accept the proposition from the government that there isn't space at this point?
No, it's hard to say. No, actually, I don't. There are other resources there that could be tapped. There's church buildings, there's community halls, there's all sorts of things. They may not be directly, people mightn't see them as suitable as long-term accommodation, but we're not talking about long-term accommodation. We're talking about short-term emergency. They're certainly better than tents. I really did not see when in our harshest weather people had to be put in tents. When there was community halls, you just put in a few beds, you turn on the heating, you tell the people they can't do their Zumba or their kickboxing this week because that's what it's being used for now. They should have had, because it had so much notice that this was happening, they should have had better resources in place, but at least now use the resources we have a little bit better.
The ability of any Irish politician to be honest in relation to this whole situation is incredible. I spoke to Michael McNamara today and he talked about more clear transparency when it comes to communicating with communities. But in saying that, I completely disagree. There has to be a limit on the amount of people that comes to Ireland. There are people who deserve our help, absolutely, and we should support them in any way we possibly can, who come from absolute danger in other countries or wars in other countries.
So why does it need to be
for international protection or Ukraine?
We've agreed to numbers and we're not at those numbers yet.
But in saying that, there's a limit to what we can do. And the government themselves last night put out a statement.
Why is there a limit?
Because there has to be a limit. Because there's a limit to A, how much money we have. There's a limit to how much accommodation we have. We can't house people as it is. We have people literally cannot get housing in this country or rent anywhere to live. So there's a limit to what we have. I mean, Ireland is capable of holding 10 million people. But we have to do that over a period of time. We can't do it in an instance over 1 year. And there are many people coming into Ireland at the moment.
There are many people who are not deserving of our help.
And if we had a better system put in place in immigration policy to deal with those who don't deserve our help, and they should be sent back to where they came from, the ones that actually deserve our help and the ones who really need our help would be getting it.
Well, ironically, I think actually beyond the point about there needing to be a limit, I think most people in government would agree with Niall, which is why they're trying to reform that system, and they want a better system, and they want to move away from direct provision. I'm probably more in Olivia's camp in terms of marshalling the resources that are there. I think, yeah, of course.
There still are. There's a limit, of course,
at some point, but I don't think we're anywhere near it. I think we could.
What is the limit?
I don't know what the exact figure is.
Could we not get to a point where we say at the moment, which the government did last night when they put out a statement last night, basically say there's no room at the inn?
They didn't. That's not what they said.
What they said was, if you're coming from another country and you're in a safe place, don't come to Ireland, we have no accommodation. That's more or less what they
said. But that's not evidence that we're at the limit.
Let's pause it and reassess. Deal with what we have at the moment. Try to get accommodation for the people that are here instead of having people living in woods and tents or
around.
And then restart reassess it.
That is a recipe for an indefinite pause. What I really regret in all of this is that a couple of years ago during COVID, we were told that one of the lessons, at least one lesson we would take from it, was that the government in an emergency could act with urgency.
And it seems that
lesson has been completely forgotten.
Olivia's right, we've been warned about this.
Is
it a fair comment, given the fact that the government has found accommodation for over 70,000 people, to say that they haven't been able to respond to this emergency situation?
Yeah, I do. I still think that's a fair comment. I think they had all sorts of, as Kieran says, they know how to respond more quickly now because of the experience we've had with COVID. They had all sorts of plans for modular housing. We're still not seeing that on the ground. You know, and as I said, there are easier things that we could be doing rather than just modular housing, as in looking to institutions to use their buildings,
all right,
which we're not doing to any great extent.
Okay, I just want to move on to just one final story, which we've been just plugging a little bit earlier, which is this sort of controversy that has been created this week because the Irish government is looking to put labels on all alcohol that would highlight the link between alcohol and cancer. And we've now had the Italian foreign minister coming out and saying this is an attack on Mediterranean culture and the Mediterranean diets. What do you think?
I think Forza Italia. I mean, oh my God, I know I sound like I'm an old man now just raging against dying of the light, but can we not enjoy things anymore? I mean, cancer warnings in a bottle of wine. You'd want to be necking some amount of wine.
You put a warning on a steak next.
But have we not seen warnings coming from the Canadian government this in the last week or so where they have said there is no safe amount of alcohol? It might be a difficult truth, but there is no safe.
But there is no safe way to walk out of your front door in the morning.
I think the Italians have zero to be worrying about. I don't think it's going to affect their wine sales or any other. Like, they're just one of several wine-producing countries that the Irish love. You know, the Spanish, the French, obviously.
Who, by all accounts, aren't too impressed either. Do you not think these sort of deterrents on a bottle work?
No,
it won't make an ounce of difference.
No,
I'm still smoking.
Don't think the work.
Doesn't make an ounce of difference. Doesn't make people think twice.
No, I don't think so.
I heard a consultant on the radio, an Irish consultant on the radio this morning, and I'd always thought that dry January was a bit of nonsense. Yeah. And he said it actually works. Your liver does recover from January.
Okay,
so maybe not January because it's such a long month. But do you know what I mean?
I don't drink, so I don't care.
All right, look, I'm going to have to leave it there. My thanks to all of my guests for joining me this evening. That is it from us. Our programme is available as a podcast on all major platforms, and you can also now find us on Instagram and TikTok, Tonight VMTV. But from all the late team here, good night and do take care.